I Swear Wrestling Podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to another hotly anticipated episode of the A Squared Circle Wrestling Podcast, perhaps the most eagerly anticipated episode in A Squared Circle Wrestling Podcast history. Andy Gordon, as always, joined by the subject of today's conversation, Andy Boy Simmons. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm very good actually, Andy. I've no reason to be, because being a grown man, I don't really care, but you are absolutely loving the thought of this episode today. And before I kind of reveal what we're talking about, the amount of messages I've had about this particular subject from people has been quite overwhelming, of people wanting to know the story. And to be quite honest, I don't know the story, so...
You're about to find out.
Yeah, I'm about to find out.
I do. So this episode, and this is one of a few times, normally we talk about the topic, we talk about whatever we're going to talk about, and then I come up with a little name for it after we've talked about it. But I've actually thought of a title in advance of this week's episode. Would you like to hear what it is, Andy?
Go on then.
It's called The Self-Destruction of Andy Boy Simmons, written by... Greg Lambert.
Oh, how good of him. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm all
in. So do you get the reference to that?
Yeah, the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior.
DVD, the Hatchet Job DVD they made
yeah.
of the Ultimate Warrior. So as you mentioned on week one of this podcast, you had some horrible things to say about Greg Lambert. Everyone's like, why? Greg's such a nice guy.
Right, so, what, 5-6 years ago, Greg Lambert decided he's interesting enough to write a book.
Wow, okay. Already shots fired.
Well, you know, I have no idea what's written. I have a few ideas.
All good theatre is based upon conflict, so perhaps you were just one of the antagonists in his book.
Quite possibly.
Who knows?
So this book's either been written or is Greg announces through social media or some form that he's going to write a book about the FWA. And to be quite honest, I had to assume I was going to be a contributor to this book, because... There wasn't one FWA show which I wasn't a substantial part of. The act I was doing at the time was very over with the FWA audience.
Sorry.
But it's true though. Like, you can't deny it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not tooting. It's the truth. And I was quite looking forward to talking about it. And then next thing I hear, the book is to be published, and he's got people like Johnny Fear. Who on earth is Johnny Fear?
I don't know, we're all still asking that question, but according to this book, he's the future of professional wrestling.
Right, well, what's he doing now? Do you
I
know
don't
what
know.
I mean?
I don't know, Andy. You look angry. Don't take it out on me.
Well, I'm ready for this barrage of abuse.
Okay, for all we know, Johnny Fear could be wrestling under a mask. He could be Sin Cara, for
all
we know.
Well, he's not, is he? Come on, you know, okay, this just shows what Greg Lambert's capable of.
Okay. Right, so...
And let me preface, I never knew I had an issue with Greg Lambert until this book came out.
I can see, you're getting on the aggressive already.
Because John...
He might write some nice things about you yet.
Well, maybe. Maybe he does. But I don't know, I've not read it.
Okay,
but,
so you're about to hear everything that's written about you.
But let me start with this. I was getting texts from people like Johnny Storm of screenshots of some of the things he said.
And this is already turning into my favourite episode of this show before we've even got started.
Yeah, so...
So
go ahead.
Do you want me to add a bit of context before we go? Like, just a couple of seconds.
Yeah, go on then.
So Greg Lambert, he ran a wrestling website, the Wrestling Truth or Wrestling X or some.
I don't know. He was a writer for Power Slam.
He wrote, this was a bit later on. He became a writer from Power Slam. So he was a writer for a website. And eventually he used to cover FWA shows. And eventually Alex saw something in him to bring him in to essentially be the guy to finance the FWA shows.
Yes. Yeah. So, and obviously, I think Alex saw the Power Slam connection with Gibson
and
the
yeah,
team, so.
And then Greg
Cheaper
wound up
on the adverts,
Greg yeah. wound up buying the sinking ship that was the FWA when it was its dying days. I don't even know if he really bought it, but he was just given it, given the poison chalice, so to speak. Greg was around as a manager for. Of a family stable for a period of time, and when the FWA was dying, he then became the booker of FWA, and nothing spectacular was done under his booking regime. Many people would say that he didn't do a very good job of booking FWA. However, I would argue that he'd taken FWA over over in a position where it was untenable, really. I don't think anyone would have done. I think maybe I could have turned it around, but I don't think anyone.
Well, you just run its course, hadn't it? Yeah. Like we've said before, FWA. Like the FWA is popping over all over. There's local FWA.
Well, yeah, I still believe that FWA could have existed. I think the local FWA line is an excuse, and which we can get into another time. But I believe that the only way he could have saved FWA was by doing something different instead of trying to do the same thing that he was doing, tried to continue to evolve.
Let's just start, shall we?
All right.
Let's just start. So you've
got it. And what I'd like to add, though, as well, he did run the FWA shows in Morecambe, very family-friendly shows, which are much more to your taste, I'd say, in wrestling style, right?
Yeah, totally. I did some of those.
So, and the crowds were always great in Morecambe, and many people would speculate perhaps he should have just stayed in Morecambe, and I think he himself would speculate that as well, which is what he did when FWA folded up. He continued to run shows in Morecambe. So, let's get into it, okay? So what we're going to do here, so there's 72 instances where you're mentioned in his book. Okay. We have it on Kindle. If anyone wants to read it, it's available Kindle, Amazon, whatever, okay? We're going to read each entry. Some of them may be results, some of them may be actual stories. I don't think it's going to take as long as it seems like it's going to take. If it does, we're spread into two parts.
Okay. All right. You're making this worse than it is. Like, this. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm a promoter, aren't I? I'm building it up, aren't I? I don't want you to get all like insecure about it. Mm-hmm. But like, I have to build it up. It's my job as a promoter. Like, I want people to listen. I want people to call their friends. I want people to say, "Hey, you should listen to this here," because Andy Boy Simmons is squirming before it's even started. Imagine what it's going to be like when it gets going. Okay. Right? I'm going to allow you an opportunity after each bit we talk about to give your memories. So it might. So I don't want this just to be a negative podcast. I'd like to hear your thoughts on some of the matches that you were involved in, because some of them are match results. Okay. Bear that in mind. And this may also then give us some more topics for future podcasts. So, for example, I know there's your historic Vendetta match, which I believe could be a podcast in itself. And we were both involved in that match, where you did the your crowning moment.
Did you referee that?
I did, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. He doesn't even care because he's just like, whatever. Anyway.
Go on.
And this is what Greg Lambert's problem is. But we'll get into that now. So the first bit we've got here is when Greg first arrived in the FWA, I believe. I've got to make the font smaller. So, we're going to have to look at the previous page. Okay, so let's go. So this is the start.
Let's go.
Okay, I knew, and this is me reading his book verbatim. Okay, so I knew the done thing for any newcomer to a wrestling promotion was to go around the building and shake hands with absolutely everybody. It's accepted dressing room etiquette. So that's what I did. As crew members bustled around setting up the ring for the evening's entertainment, I remember saying hello for the first time to FWA performers Raj Ghosh, his then girlfriend Jenna Buttercup the Maid, who coincidentally, as a side note, was a bridesmaid at my wedding.
Yep.
James Ty, fellow Iron Lion, Jack Xavier, Andy Simmons, Ulf Herman, Paul Burchill, and Paul Travell. Okay, any thoughts of meeting Greg there?
No, I remember the show. It was New Frontiers 2003, and that was the day Pat Roach was introduced as the commissioner, who didn't even know the name of the company, bless him.
So, yeah. And by all accounts here, just scanning through, Greg was made to feel very welcome. So far, so good.
Wow.
Okay. So,
kick.
Now we were starting to wonder where it went wrong. Okay. Oh, I can start. So, one problem the FWA did have in early 2003, though, was a real shortage of heels, especially now Dean Ayers' old school stable had been conquered and disbanded. There was a Duke of Danger, a snobbish English noble from Hampton Court, and his sidekick, the butler Simmons. But they were more comic baddies than really hated villains. But there weren't many others on the FWA roster who the fans truly loathed. Someone who they might pay money to see get their just desserts. I thought Greg the Truth Lambert could fill that gap in the market. So, over to you, Andy.
Let me try and word this properly. You've really put me on the spot with this. I guess he's kind of right. Like, we were sort of buffoonish heels, but not really by design. It was just we weren't really given any direction apart from I was his heater, the Duke of Dangers, and that was it. Like, I can't even remember who Duke of Danger wrestled on that show.
So someone else is to blame, mate.
Well, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So, but I think that's a fair thing to say. Not like I don't really say.
I think the intention was for us to be dastardly heels, but we were just kind of left to our. We weren't sort of given any direction for matches, or so like we'd be wrestling anyone, Hayd Vance and someone, and it wasn't. They'd just kind of just do a match. They wouldn't do a match based around the characters. It would just be a match because we had no direction. If someone said to us, Duke of Danger, we want you to be, real dastardly heel. Simmons, you're going to trip up Hayd Vance, and Buttercup, you're going to choke him on the ropes. We would have done it, but no one ever told us to. So
there you go.
Yeah, it was just like the two lads put a match together that might have had some comedy spots in it, and that's how we end up coming out looking like buffoonish heels.
And
let me also say, normally, you don't need people putting matches together, but FWA was so, so they wanted to be so micromanaged. We wanted direction. We wanted to help it and see their vision. You know, see the FWA vision. So if they wanted us to play these characters, we wanted to play these characters the way FWA wanted to be play these characters. But no one ever told us how to play these characters.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I accept that point. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing anyway to have someone on the show who is a comic villain. It's more FWA's fault that there wasn't any other heels because I say like a wrestling roster should contain something of everything. You know, it should have dastardly, like real proper evil heels. It should have comic heels. It should, do you know what I mean? It should have different levels throughout.
Yeah.
And it's not your fault that the role you played was the comic heel, whether or not you were directed to do so or not. Okay.
Yeah.
So the next bit we've got is part of a results lineup here. So let's just look at this. So this was at Crunch 2003.
Okay.
Okay, and this was load of rubbish.
Right,
JX. This was when JX beat the Zebra Kid to win the All England title, but decision reversed when JX was revealed to be the suspended Jack Xavier. That's what a load of tosh that was. Juventud Guerrera down Jody Fleisch. Simmons pinned Raj Ghosh.
Yeah, I do remember that match. Yeah, because the bottom rope broke. And that was the first time I'd wrestled, I think, on an FWA, quotation marks, main show.
Okay, and did you not wrestle a horrible tag match one time, or was that before or after?
No, a singles match. It was my first singles
and
match.
Can I just stop there before you start slagging Greg off again?
Mm-hmm.
Because he then goes on to say, we also marvelled at the popularity of Andy Simmons, a wrestling butler. Simmons' role as the Duke of Danger's manservant, who wrestled in a waistcoat, bow tie and trousers, was intended as a mid-card comedy attraction, yet the stocky sidekick managed to elicit the biggest evasion on the entire show. This unexpected devotion of FWA fans was christened Simmons Zamania. Now, I don't even remember that term being used.
No, neither do I.
But Simmons Zamania's running wild. Go on.
Yeah,
tell us how popular you were.
I was well popular.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, I was. You make it sound worse.
So don't get so insecure. Okay, yes, you were very popular. You were. You were the most over character on the shows.
I was the only character on the show. Well, yeah, you were. And just wrestlers.
And
one of the only.
And people got behind you. People liked you. People loved you. People adored you. It turned you into, like, despite the fact you were supposed to be a heel at the time, you became a beloved character, which then played into your story.
Downtrodden butler with the
Duke of Danger. And I don't believe there was ever really a good payoff to that,
no,
ever.
We tried in IPW years later.
Yeah, but it was a different dynamic.
Yeah, sure.
Because
you
were the heel and he was a... And I believe I gave the best... Because that was obviously my doing, trying to play on the past, to tie the worlds together.
Yes.
And I think that was it was nicely done. But I feel like, obviously, FWA could have, with the spotlight they had, there was definitely room for that, you know, him to keep whipping you until you turn face on him, officially face, and leave Duke as a heel. You know, I think that could have been a good scenario at the end of the day. But there was also other mitigating circumstances, like you didn't want to be the butler. So, but we'll get into that another day.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Okay. Simmons beat Hayd Vanson. You were allowed to beat Hayd Vanson.
Did I? Was that on a FWA breakout tour, maybe?
Oh, this was a show in Morecambe.
Yes.
The very first FWA show in Morecambe.
Okay.
Simmons beat Hayd Vanson. So Greg must have liked you a little bit.
Yeah, Eddie Vanson was the golden boy, wasn't he?
He was.
Like, golden boy of Alex. Like, he was Alex's top student. So, I can't really remember a great deal, but I remember wrestling Hayde, and I think he might have even broke the Duke of Danger's arm the day before. So I was a little bit worried coming into that one. I remember wrestling him, certainly. It's nothing, like...
So that was all going well for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, two wins.
I feel like Conrad Thompson here.
Yeah.
It was all going well for you until June 2003, back at the Broxbourne Civic Halls, when Birchall crushed Simmons and Mark Sloan. Now, that strikes me as a bit of an odd pairing.
Yeah, well, Duke of Danger broke his arm. So we were set to wrestle the Duke of Danger on the Frontiers of Honor show. Sorry, we were set to wrestle Paul Birchall on the Frontiers of Honor show.
This was Vendetta, by the way, June 2003.
Okay, so a month before that, we were set to wrestle Paul at Frontiers of Honor. That got changed to Raj Ghosham, RJ Singh, who got annihilated by Birchall in what was Birchall's official FWA debut. He'd wrestled on some academy shows and stuff, which caused all manner of problems. But, do you know what? Normally, I'm pretty good. I have no memory of that whatsoever.
Okay. And this one. Okay. I like this. I'm going to read this whole paragraph because I'm just looking at it and I like the way he words stuff. It just makes me laugh, right?
Okay.
So, as I was saying, the Vendetta show had a bit of everything. If you liked fast-paced match with lots of near falls and high flying, there was Johnny Storm versus Super Crazy. If you were a fan of comedy, there was Duke of Danger and Simmons, whose rib-tickling double act was really getting over, in brackets, starting to resonate with the FWA, as if someone who wasn't a fan of the FWA / wrestling insider /, do you know what I mean?
My Dan wouldn't pick this book up.
Yeah, but it's nice to assume that you're writing for the dumbest common... Not the dumb, that's unfair, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's nice to assume that you're writing for the mass public with the FWA fans. And then what I really liked here was, if you liked sexy ladies, there was Nikita. that just made me laugh.
Okay.
So he's putting you over there. He's telling you, you've got a rib-tickling double act. So that's nice, right?
Okay. I kind of feel like people have been unfairly painting an unfair picture here.
Well, I don't know, because this is Greg's early days within FWA. You know, there's a lot of time for the relationship to die down.
Okay.
So here's the next one. Simmons beat Mark Sloan. So this would have been at Hotwired 2003. Any memories of your epic rivalry with your trainer, Mark Sloan?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Just a match.
Okay. And then we get to... So this is making me scratch my head a little bit here. So we get to New Frontiers 2004.
Okay.
So this is
me and Birchall as a tag team.
Yeah. Okay, so. Just looking there. Just scanning, surveying the situation, just to try and get a bit of context.
Stick
here.
With us, folks.
I've completely lost it. So you and Birchall as a tag team, yes.
Yes, against George Castano and Stevie Knight.
Stevie Knight, yeah. Okay, so that's a weird team.
Yeah, so it came out that Stevie Knight, I think, was doing an angle.
Where he was looking for a tag team partner.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So Stevie had sort of been a mainstay on the British wrestling circuit in the late 90s, disappeared, I think, for a year or two. Then Alex had budded up with him and brought him back, so...
Okay, and this what this is really... I guess there may well be some results missing from this, but what this is really hitting home with for me as I'm going through this is how few shows FWA actually ran.
Sure.
So we romanticise about it, right? And I think, like, for me anyway, when I look back at FWA shows and I look at the... You mentioned on I can't remember if it was this podcast or a previous podcast we did, about wrestlers not having proper ring gear.
Yes.
Right? And there was wrestlers on the FWA shows who didn't have proper ring gear. Mm-hmm. And I look back at some of the in-ring stuff and it really wasn't that good.
So I think FWA, it works both ways really, whether we'd had the promise from the promoters, but if the wrestlers had... So Brandon Thomas, for example, who is actually still wrestling, and I don't need to keep saying this, but he's a good guy, he really is. But if he'd have... So he was given the Jesus gimmick. If he'd have invested some money in a nice gown, you know, really put some money into the gimmick, that would have been far more successful gimmick. But then the promoters were always so like iffy as to how many shows they were going to wear. You know, if he's going to invest £200-300 in a nice gown, he needs to know he's going to get his money's worth. But instead, he walked out in a pair of horrible biker shorts with no logo and a black t-shirt.
And like I want to say tracksuit, trainers and kick pads.
So
ratty trainers and kick pads.
But now, to be fair, he's a bodybuilder now.
Yeah, I heard he's in a tremendous shape.
Yeah, he looks fantastic. Yeah.
I was saying, like, it just hits home how few shows FWA ran. But they also must have done a good job of keeping that hype going throughout.
But we were the only ones. We were the only one with a strong presence.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, this is we're talking here about later some night. So I guess FWA, by the time FWA Crunch rolled around in Broxbourne in April 2004, the family was looking threadbare for some reason. Ian Disciple and Ash were no longer being used. So Ash was no longer being used. Why?
It must be because...
When he fell off the ropes?
Must be when he went for that springboard.
Why was Ian Disciple no longer being used?
I don't know. Maybe he didn't want to do it anymore. Like, Ian was he was into his weightlifting and bodybuilding and martial arts and stuff. So maybe he just jacked it in.
So they were no longer being used. Sub story there. I remember one time when Alex wanted to work an FWA Academy show and he said, put me on with Ian. And Mark thought he was talking about the Idol Ian Logan.
Yes, of course.
And Alex Shane turns up thinking he's working Ian Disciple and he's working Ian Logan.
Oh, really? Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. Just a little... So for some reason, Interscope and Ash had long been used. Drew wasn't available. Drew McDonald, that is. So there was Paul Raj Scott. Oh, and the trusty photographic tribute to Mr. McDonald at my side. So that's, they used to carry a picture of Drew McDonald.
Yeah, so Drew was the leader, wasn't he? Like the evil, demonic Highlander from hell. The higher power.
Yeah.
You know, if you compare it to the WWF. Yeah. The higher power of the family was Drew McDonald. And again, I swear it was probably because they just didn't book him.
Yeah, and he had other dates. Yeah. And they just assumed he would drop dates for other people. But Drew was a full-time wrestler. Mm-hmm. Who,
with commitments.
Yeah.
And who
would work a job if given the date.
Yeah. You know? Like, FWA, I don't think, meant a great deal to Drew. You know, like us young lads were like, oh, FWA.
Yeah, I think for Drew it was work, wasn't
it?
So... As the family defeated Mark Belton, and Aviv Mayan in a tag title match, which again seems weird knowing what happened. I don't know. It's just seems weird to me, that combination. But there you go. So later that night, as Simmons and Buttercup soaked up adulation of the crowd, I, Greg Lambert, led the family to ringside, as I had for Raj Ghosh nearly a year earlier. I got in Simmons' face and cut an impassioned speech. So maybe this is where the resentment begins. Cut an impassioned speech in an attempt to recruit the FWA's cult hero to the family. I pointed out how the Duke of Danger mistreated his henchmen and how he could be British heavyweight champion if he ditched the ridiculous butler outfit, dumped his blonde scrubber of a maid, and joined our group. As the FWA's new number one babyface, it's fair enough. Nice.
Yep. As
the FWA's new number one babyface, Simlins duly refused. This led to the family beatdown, which featured the bizarre sight of Raj dropping his own girlfriend, Jenna, headfirst with a DDT. Yes, even then, domestic violence is perfectly acceptable in the professional wrestling ring, where almost anything goes. But the Duke of Danger scooted out to ringside to make the save, smashing my beloved Drew photograph frame over Scott Parker's bonce in the process. I acted all devastated and furious and vowed revenge on Hampton Court by writing a horrible book about one of the members.
Yeah, you got that revenge.
So that was a setup for one of your greatest moments, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Anything more?
Of a year later. No, I remember it well, actually, and I remember it being quite successful. The show itself... See, where we're covering so much ground, I'm worrying we're going to, you know, all the good, exciting stories behind those shows,
but
we're
going
to reveal, but the show, like how that show came to be. There's a story as to why there wasn't many in attendance and how there's more 10 people.
Okay, well, we don't need to cover that.
No, that's my point. But like,
this is a personal vendetta, you and Greg Lambert.
Yes.
And so far, I hope you're feeling pretty bad because so far.
Well, I just know there's things to come because I've been sent things to come. But let's just carry on. It was a good night.
It was a good night, was it?
Well, the show was good and.
Okay. Well, speaking of good nights.
Oh God.
So, this is after a Morecambe show.
Okay, so yeah, so Crunch went well.
Results for FWA Crunch.
Yeah.
So that was, the Broxbourne show, April 8th, 2004, was actually on my, no, the Thursday before, that April 8th, 2004 was actually on my birthday.
Okay.
And that was a tour, wasn't it? I remember that tour very
yes.
well.
Yes, that was my Bridge Breakout.
That was, yeah, it was my big birthday weekend. I was refereeing in Morecambe on my birthday.
Wow.
So that night, Mark Kay and I actually made a profit for the first time ever as promoters.
Okay, so we're now in May 2004. Yes.
So that show was the first time as promoters had made a profit, and they always had good houses at the Morecambe Dome. And that goes back to what we say time and time and time again on this podcast. It's very hard to make money in British wrestling, right? So they celebrated by getting down with the Brown, referring to D'Lo Brown, who was on the tour, at a seedy Morecambe nightclub, Crystal Tees. I'm not sure Alex Shane and Andy Simmons recall this evening quite as happily, though, given the rough pair of slappers they left with. I swear blind to this day that Simmons's lady friend actually had no teeth. Andy.
Right. Me and Alex, so I've not seen Alex in a long time, but when I do see him, we often bring this story up. So, and let me make it abundantly clear, and I don't need to really defend myself. I'm a happily married man now, but actually, I was really Alex's wingman there. So, I didn't do anything with this woman.
I did not have sexual relations with that lady.
And Alex, what me and Alex laugh about is the fact that me and Alex, we went back to this couple's house. I think there was a couple of other lads there, and they were doing drugs. And me and Alex were like, can we go to sleep in the room next door? So me and Alex actually shared a bed next door, woke up in the morning and left. So no, I was not involved in anything. And actually, to as far as I can remember, Alex was not involved either.
Okay.
I was there for Alex's sake, but Alex was the same as me. We got there and we were like, oh no, thank you.
So there you go, clearing the story
true.
Up.
And yeah, I do laugh at that with Alex now.
Good, good. Okay, so now we go to Carpe Diem, June 18th, Brent Town Hall, where Simmons beat Birchall via countout.
Okay.
So that was, I guess, the first time Birchall ever got beat, right?
Yes, that's what the big pitch was to me, was you're the first man that's ever beaten Birchall. But I've already beaten Birchall 100 times. FWA Academy
shows. At the Buckland Community Centre.
Sewn out of a Royal Rumble at Croydon for Brian Dixon. So I understood that within the realm of FWA, it was a big deal, but I think they kind of wanted me to be a bit more enthusiastic.
And you're only winning by count out, and I know that, you know, you'd rather go over clean in the middle of the ring with a blockbuster,
with
wouldn't
the butler
you?
Buster, yes.
So we've got they overpromised, but they overpromised and underdelivered. So Alex Shane's mantra was under promise and over deliver, and this is the first time they over promised and under delivered this show.
For the show, because that's the Steve Carino show we talked about last week.
And I wish that we'd read this first, because there's a lot more context to the Jake Roberts stuff. But never mind.
That's okay.
Too late for that.
Yep.
Too late.
Maybe we'll revisit it.
Nope. Despite this, there were several memorable moments at Carpe Diem. Simmons ended the winning streak of Birchall thanks to outside interference from Drew McDonald. Why would Drew help Simmons? Was her family still trying to recruit the mega popular butler? This was interesting stuff, which added an element of intrigue and kept the family Hampton Court War simmering ahead of their upcoming clash for the tag team titles. Any thoughts there? Because I remember this, and I didn't for one second think that the family was still trying to recruit you.
Okay, I can't remember. Because everything was so spaced out, everything was months apart, people had almost sort of
forgotten about the original angle. Because the original angle, so this was in...
that'd have been June.
So that was in June, and the original one was in April, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, a couple of months apart. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Okay. Okay, so this one, we move to Vendetta 2004. So already we're at the next year's Vendetta.
Yes.
You know, and a couple of moments ago, we were at last year's Vendetta 2003. So, again, just the illustration there. So, Duke of Danger and Simmons has gone down in the annals of FWA history as the Simmons double turn. It also created the loudest pop, again, for those of you who aren't in the business, kids, noise, I'd heard on a live UK wrestling show to that point. Okay, so that was the double turn. Do you want me to read through what happened, or should we just skip this part?
Well, let's skip this part, because I remember the original plan...
versus what actually happened.
Versus what actually happened. Okay, and the phone call I got the next day. So.
Yeah, and I have some knowledge of that, being the man in the middle for that.
Yes.
That historic contest. Okay. So we're skipping through a lot here because of the double turn here. But what's very interesting is in the very next FWA show, after that historic turn, let's look at the date of it. It was Hotwired 2004.
In September. So July 2004, Vendetta was when me and Duke of Danger, we beat the family and became the FWA Tag Team Champions.
Yes.
Okay.
So your next one was Mark Sloan defeated Andy Boy Simmons, or Andy Simmons the Butler.
Yes.
So that was the next result.
Yes.
So you got anything for me?
No, I remember the finish. Mark beat me with a spin kick because Mark liked to do a lot of high impact moves, and I was very conscious and aware of my character. And I thought, well, if he does all these big high impact moves and head drops and neck drops, the Butler would be destroyed. I said the Butler should get beaten by a martial arts spin kick, and that's what we did for the finish.
Okay.
And I was that's when I really started to get my head around card position. I think we were on first.
So you had a boring match.
I didn't have a boring match.
No.
Okay. No, I didn't go out and kill ourselves because it didn't need that. Like, it really didn't. Like, the character wasn't about that.
Okay, so the next part is an interview with Spud, who I assume must have debuted around this time. So Barry told me, is Barry Charalombos, his mentor. So Barry told me my height was the most important part of my gimmick. He taught me to make my lack of size into a massive positive rather than a negative. I'm the same height as Andy Simmons, but he always wanted to be a big guy. But why try to be something you're not? Barry told me to embrace my smallness.
Well, I am three times the width of Spud, though.
Good point.
And I love you, Spud. I know you're listening. I'm sure I've got an inch on you, though.
Cool. Right. Oh, scathing. So this would be... Oh, so now we move on to Uprising. And okay. He is scathing, but I agree.
I'm all ears.
I agree with him on this one.
Yeah, you might be right.
Right. So this was followed by a lackluster FWA tag team title match. Simmons pinned Sloan to win it after Stevie Knight was lured backstage by the charms of Buttercup. The fans barely mustered a cheer. What a contrast to the overwhelming reaction to Simmons at Vendetta. Perhaps Hampton Court's act had peaked already.
He might be right. To be fair, he might be right, but surely booking 101, the chase of the underdog is what's over. Once the underdog has won the match, won the belts, got the prestige, what else have people got to get behind?
Well, to me, this is where you should have dropped the belt. They've done a big angle leading up to
this
match.
They've done a big thing about
despite
Stevie
the fact that you hadn't done... You should have had like a few victories on shows leading up to this.
But they didn't run any shows.
And you should have... And like the reason why you weren't over, and I can say this from experience, and I can say this like without a shadow of a doubt, right? Because I run shows monthly at London Cockpit in front of 200 people a month. They're sell-out shows. I also run shows 6-7 times a year at York Hall Bethnal Green in front of 1,200 people. Now, my regulars who are over at the London Cockpit, like the 200 people who are at the cockpit, know, love them, they invest in everything they do. When they first get onto a York Hall show, the people don't know who they are.
Right.
Okay? And they don't get the reaction they should get. Right? When FWA went from running 500, 300 to 500 seat buildings to a 3,000 seat arena...
which wasn't even a third,
which wasn't even a third fall. How are they then going to how's that then going to translate to crowd reaction?
Right.
That and the fact the match. So to me, I don't necessarily think that's a sign that the act had peaked. And to me, but I think there was a mistake made in that. I think that Stevie Knight and Mark Soames should have won that match. Duke of Danger should have blamed you for it. Then that should have led to Duke of Danger roughing you up a few over the next few months. Again, if you're running, going under the working premise that you're going to be running shows, which leads to you turning face on Duke of Danger.
Yeah.
To me, that's where you go with that.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So there was no depth to the angle with a long title run, which again was not my decision. Obviously, we had to Mark Sloan was in the match. Mark Sloan trained me, and he came up with a few ideas, which the other three of us all looked at each other like, you know, is he for real? But we didn't because we had all the respect in the world for Mark. And do you know what I mean? Like, and to gauge whether the act has peaked or not, on metrics of you had probably 500 people there to see Terry Funk, you had 500 people because it was wrestling in Coventry at the Sky Dome. They thought that looks fun. Then you had 500 people who were just the regular FWA fans, and in a building that was, like we said, you know,
3,000 seats. Yeah.
You know, so I realised 500 is 1,500. Yeah. Therefore, it'd be half full. But
it may have been. Anyway, so this is when Paul Birchall's leaving now, so we get to Gold Rush. So the highlight of Paul's final FWA show was the main event, our answer to WWE's Royal Rumble, a 15-man over-the-top battle royal. Right, can I just... So I remember the Gold Rush shows, and it's funny to think there's only 15 men in the shows, but they were so intricately planned out. Now, we have our Revolution Rumble, which is our contenders... Rumble, our trainee show Rumble, where it's planned intricately because of the fact that we're getting in a lot of wrestlers who aren't
experienced.
So we want to highlight everyone in the best way possible. So we plan the Rumble out for that very reason, to be just like that. But these Rumbles were so, these 15-man Rumbles were more intricate than the planning we do for,
yeah,
for these.
I never did one.
Take my word for it. It was very, very intricate and such precise detail, which led to confusion and whatever. Anyway, a 15-man over top rope battle royal. The Gold Rush was meant to be Andy Simmons' finest hour. Alex wanted to elevate Simmons into the main event picture by having him win the Gold Rush in a major upset. He then wanted to feud with Simmons over the FWA title and eventually lose the championship to the Butler. Now, at this point, I'd say that's clever work from Alex, because Alex always had a good mind for wrestling, and I think he's always wanted to be in the most over program, the most talked about programs, and that would have been the perfect reaction for him to get that, because I know the heat he would have probably generated against you working. It would have been, to me, that would have been the predecessor for Simmons the heel versus JC Thunder.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It would have been a similar style program from that. When you're all said and done, I think that any doubts about Simmons or Butler not being over would have been quashed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
So anyway, Greg Lambert though. So to me, it seems like you had one night in Morecambe where he thinks you may have done something with a lady with no teeth.
Yeah.
That has then made him think less of you as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You then had a dodgy night on a dodgy show in Coventry.
Yep.
And that's just confounded his opinion. He could overlook it if you were still the most overact on the show, but that's just confounded his opinion because you never got the same reaction that Terry Funk got.
Right.
So, as a result, Greg Lambert now, it seems, has soured on you.
Okay.
Okay, and just out of interest, in terms of your... And at this time as well, he's getting more and more power within the company, right? Mm-hmm. Now, at this time, did you ever feel that there was any of your relationship with Greg had changed at all? Did he behave any differently towards you?
No, I didn't really know Greg.
Okay.
I don't, like, I never
Maybe
had
that's
any
a problem. Maybe that's a problem. Well, maybe he feels like you... Anyway, Greg here. I had real misgivings about this. I didn't feel the manservant was a credible face of the company. I thought the fans would support the plucky underdog while he chased the title, but once he won it, I didn't think they'd accept him as heavyweight champion of the world. This had been shown by the crazy reaction to Simmons winning the tag team titles compared to the tepid response to his first defence. Now again, but the first defence was Uprising.
Yeah, it was the only defence, I think. Maybe one or two, but yeah.
So, anything?
Well, it's just so we always talk about this, Andy. We're like just idiots running shows who don't really know what they're doing. So like to gauge, not to, you know, go over it all over again, but to gauge that response at the Coventry Sky Dome as a measuring stick to how well the act was is just ludicrous. You know, I could have been over, not over in Coventry, but we went to, I don't know, bloody Petersfield the next day, and it was, you know,
WrestleMania all like, over again.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? Like, the more we get into this, the less I'm taking it personally. But you might well shed some light on some stuff later on.
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
It all just seems like silly people running wrestling shows who are trying to run a WWE-based product when they're running 8 shows a year.
And I'm sure we will talk more about that in future episodes. But right now, we're focusing on Andy Boy Simmons and Greg Lambert. Or Andy Boy Simmons, as told by Greg Lambert in his book, The True Story of British Wrestling's Revival, or the not-so-true story, as we might find out. So here Greg goes on to say, I also felt that Andy was starting to believe his own hype. He was developing a big-headed attitude, turning up to one show wearing a T-shirt emblazoned with the word ICON in big letters. Alex always used to tell me that Simmons would one day be a really effective heel because in real life he was hard to like. I was starting to see what he meant by that.
Right, so that T-shirt that supposedly was emblazoned with the word icon, I can tell you now that is absolute bollocks. It was a T-shirt that I bought in Gunmore at the Levi's store.
Just a shopping centre in Portsmouth.
Yeah, bought in Gunmore in Portsmouth. And it was from a Levi's store, and it, on the left breast, you would probably say it. The word said, I am an icon.
Even worse.
Right.
Not just saying icon, you're saying I am an icon.
Right, and I wore it, right, I was 21 years old, and I wore it when I go clubbing. It was like, it was a funny ha-ha. I just happened to put that T-shirt on that day. I know exactly what T-shirt is saying, what he's talking about. The words were not emblazoned across it. I'm going to swear, that is bullshit.
Well, maybe, okay. Maybe. Have you still got that T-shirt?
I might.
Have you got any pictures of yourself wearing that T-shirt?
Yeah, I'm sure I do, actually.
Maybe you could dig that up and put that on the Twitter.
Yes.
And you can prove.
Yeah, because that was the one Johnny took great joy in sending to me. And Alex, me and Alex have always had a funny relationship where I think anyone who knows me, like you said before, Andy, the fragile ego is the way you worded it. It was I never responded in... it was just a wall of like, oh, I don't really know if I'm good enough to be here. So I never purposely went out of my way to be unpleasant to anyone ever. Certainly not in those days. I was happy to be there. So Alex can think what he wants and clearly did think what he wants. I don't really care, but I do care because I feel it's a little bit unfair. But there you go. If that's what he thinks, whatever.
Okay. So he then goes on.
Oh, okay. Carries on.
So we know that you obviously missed the show, but these words in here, I think, it's a little bit. So perhaps the wrestling gods didn't want Simmons to be FWA champion either.
Right.
Because Andy never made it to Gold Rush, missing out on his big moment because he was hospitalised days before the show. And then he goes on to talk about your cystic fibrosis, which we'll talk about another date. But then Simmons' loss was a gain for Johnny Storm, who I'm suggested took the Hampton Court members' place in the first ever Gold Rush. The returning Wonder Kid became the number one contender for Show Stealer's title in a beautifully executed surprise finish.
Well, he was right. I was. So
the wrestling gods are looking down on you and shaking their heads.
Oh, dear. I imagine they love watching Greg Lambert's wrestling shows.
Maybe that's what they're shaking their heads
over. I bet
they
love the Manchester Massive and Charlie Rage pretending to be Paul Birchall. And...
oh, he's getting angry. I knew it wouldn't take long. Okay, so let's find some more. So, oh. Okay. Oh, this is a... Alex knew he couldn't organise New Frontiers 2005 on his own. He no longer had the desire to, so he relied on me more than ever. He also recruited a large booking team to come up with ideas for new FWA characters and storylines in the new year. I could do with one of these committees.
I remember that. Yeah.
I didn't feel comfortable with this at all. Around 10 of us assembled at Finsbury Park in January and sat around a table pitching creative ideas. There were wrestlers Stick, Sandy Simmons and Paul Travell, Alex, myself, John Atkins, Dean Ayers, and even a pair of wide-eyed FWA fans called Sean and Jody. I remember these two.
Really?
Yeah. Who couldn't believe their luck. Looking back at this now, it was bloody ridiculous. We weren't like the team of WWE script writers. None of us were getting paid. So in my mind, it was just an excuse for a load of us to sit around the table and play Booker for a day. I could just imagine what Dino Scarlett would have said about this indulgence.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I remember that day driving up to Finsbury Park on a Monday, I think it was, and complete waste of time.
Okay. So, but at this booking meeting, Alex also explained his ideas to play off Simmons' real-life condition with a dramatic storyline where Alex would beat up... God. Alex would beat up Buttercup and then batter Simmons until he coughed up blood. But then Andy would fight back and beat Alex for the FWA title. Aside from my misgivings about Simmons as a main event babyface, I also had reservations about taking advantage of his real-life health issues so graphically. It seemed crass to me. Thoughts?
You know Andy, one of my best friends, but so I was born with cystic fibrosis. It's something I have a couple of times in recent years, but only my close friends ever knew about it, which we can talk about that another day. So for him to even talk about it so publicly in a book really fucking pisses me off. You know, it was my decision, and Alex pitched me the idea and the angle, and it was wrestling. Do you know what I mean? Like, how many other absurd angles have there been? It didn't bother me, and surely it was down to my decision whether or not we ran the angle. You know, whether we're not down to me, but like, if I'm comfortable with it, what's he got to do with him? So.
Okay. So. Here we go. This is Enfield, the Southbury Leisure Centre.
Probably one of the worst days of my life. let's read it.
It went from bad to worse when Dr. Dirk Feelgood and Nurse Stephanie Scope arrived for their new in-ring inter... And Dirk Feelgood was one of Greg's boys, right? Yeah. For his new interview segment. New talent, the FWA New Talent Initiative.
Yes.
They arrived for their new in-ring interview show, The Clinic, featuring special guest Andy Simmons. I'd hope The Clinic would be... I'd hoped The Clinic would become FWA's answer to Chris Jericho's highlight reel, The Brother Love Show, or maybe even Piper's Pit. But while WWE would have the luxury of thousands of dollars to spend on an expensive background set, we just had a tatty wooden desk and sofa in Southbury Leisure Centre ring. It looked stupid. I'd come up with this segment as a way of developing Andy Simmons' cystic fibrosis angle. First of all, okay, whatever, I'm not getting into FWA booking, but accompanied by Nurse Stephanie Scope. Dr. Dirk gave Andy a good telling off, telling him it was irresponsible to be wrestling with such a condition, leading to a match between them, which Simmons won. With a doctor and butler and the nurse in the ring at the same time, it was like a bedroom farce with the village people. Plus, Bagger, his microphone kept cutting out. It didn't go well.
It's not up to Bagger, right? It might have been Bagger's set, but it's the promoter's...
Bagger was the promoter. So stop pointing your fingers and getting angry.
Okay, so Bagger was a promoter. But if Greg has booked this, right, and it was already, like I've just said 2 minutes ago, it's not something I regularly talked about. So I said, if we're going to do this angle, I want it to be good, right? And I wanted it to be a positive message as well for other kids or adults with the same condition as me. So when I turn up to a leisure centre, again, this goes back to idiots running shows, anyone knows a promo session in a leisure centre, an enormous leisure centre, is not going to go down well. So I knew full well it was going to be a disaster. And I remember the Pitbulls were at that show and they said to me, we felt so bad for you, Andy, because it was just a complete disaster. And all I wanted it to do with, in regards to the cystic fibrosis angle was I just wanted it to be dealt with decently.
And I'd argue, yes, a main event angle with Alex Shane is a nice platform to tell that story. But
right. And also, we were on the Wrestling Channel at the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, the Wrestling Channel wasn't ITV, but there were people who watched it, and whether or not people followed it, but people watched it, and I thought, and all, something I think I kind of missed out on my youth, and we will talk about this another day, is regards to being born the condition, I'm probably one of the healthiest people in the world with the condition, so I've always kind of wanted to try and be a positive role model, but I've always been nervous about talking about it publicly, and for me, even me to talk about it now with you is quite hard for me to talk about it. And for him just publishing a book, how disregarded and how he didn't make sure that the PA system was working.
It's almost an insult, isn't it?
It is. If you have a terrible PA system, you don't do it. Because I'm sat there trying to get this angle over, trying to get Dirk Feelgood over. Yeah, we're trying to get each other over, trying to get the angle over, and we've got a crappy PA system. The thing shouldn't have happened in the first place. So I'm not saying he's blaming me there, because he's not, but that's how I felt about that. I was absolutely furious.
Okay. So, we are now at... the next bit he mentions about is he talks about celebrity wrestling. Your name's just mentioned as a flash. But here we go to FWA Noah Limits.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, Noah Limits. Yeah, we lost the belts.
Yep. So, every match that night was quality. If I don't mind saying so myself.
Well, you didn't do it, Greg, so...
Okay, so follow their own. Sticks and Stone ripped the tag team titles from Simmons in a virtual handicap match. Alex had lost faith in the abilities of the Duke of Danger and wanted him written out in a pre-match injury angle, so Andy was forced to battle two bruisers on his own in vain. This would mark Dane Hardy's last appearance for the FWA. I'll always have fond memories of working with Dane, another sound bloke who I first met on a show Stealer Night Out 3 years earlier. Any more thoughts on your last night?
That was never made clear to us about Dane. But Dane was just a guy who really, he had one foot in wrestling, you know. He was acting, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He had other things, so, you know, he did wrestling for a laugh, basically.
Okay, so, when scripting Vendetta 2005, it's, again, just so funny, just like, when scripting, like, I don't know, whatever. When scripting Vendetta 2005, I'd go as far to say I've probably scripted about three wrestling shows in my life, and but I've run... hundreds. But when scripting Vendetta 2005, Alex and I went back to basic. We've pulled the plug on... this is just amazing. Yeah. We pulled the plug on the Paul Travell schizophrenia angle.
Huh?
I didn't even realise there was one.
No.
And we scrapped that.
Maybe that's clearer in a previous paragraph.
But I didn't even... like, just thinking, like, I was at these shows and I didn't know that was going... we scrapped the Andy Simmons cystic fibrosis fiasco and instead booked a no-frills show focused on great wrestling. Did you get told anything about when it was being...
No, I think... So we're now 2000... Would that be the show where I turned up and cut a promo on the New Breed? And I was very... I've always been quite good at getting my mates in places, and I wanted to get my best friend Eamon O'Neill, who's been begging for a shout-out on this podcast.
Hi, Eamon.
We were the United Lions on, like, you know, for Brian Dixon and Phil Powers and, you know, other promotions around the country, and I really wanted to do that. And to be fair, Greg said, we'll do it. And I came out... I'm not sure if it was that show, but according to the timeline, I reckon it probably is. I came out and just cut a promo on the New Breed, I believe, and said, well, I'm coming back as Andy Boy Simmons and I'm bringing a tag team partner, that kind of thing.
I don't think that was, because you had your match with Alex Shane where you...
Oh, in Morecambe.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because that's where we're at now. I just wish, you know, like, if you're going to argue Greg Lambert, then you should argue with facts rather than just making up your own timeline.
Well, that came later then. Go on.
Because this is August 27th, 2005.
Yes.
The show was also the night when Andy Simmons dropped his butler gimmick. We've got a good story about that we can use, but...
not today.
Not today, because I don't think Greg... Given the story, you know, like, it's quite a cool story.
Yes.
You can see that he doesn't have much knowledge of the situation, because he definitely would mention it in this, would you say?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But anyway, but maybe he's more intent on ripping you instead of instead of telling the actual story as what happened in this match.
Yeah.
So, you're clenching your fists.
Do I need to be?
Maybe. I've not read this.
Okay.
I've not read this. So it's when you drop the butler gimmick.
Yeah.
By then, I've managed to persuade. Alex that Andy wasn't yet heavyweight championship material. So he's been digging at you the whole time.
But to be fair, he was probably right. Like, you know, on that front.
What I'd say though?
Go on.
I'd say. So this was 2005, right? Mm-hmm. In 2006, did I not make you a hell of a champion?
I won the championship. it's a fair comment, but, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
But just saying.
But that was probably my feelings at the time, was I'm 21. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not 6'2".
Okay. So, by then, I'd managed to persuade Alex and he wasn't yet heavyweight championship material. And this is wrapping up now because I can see we only had a few left to go of your name and there's a few mentions of it here. So to keep Simmons happy, we complied with his wishes to kill off his manservant alter ego. There's a story in that as well, which you may, like, you know, I'd like to hear about how this all came about. We'll save that for another day, which he believed was the albatross around his neck, keeping him from being a serious main event singles competitor. And he didn't want to wear the waistcoat and bow tie anymore. A huge admirer of the British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith, he wanted to be Andy Boy Simmons, complete with the running power slam finishing move. To introduce a new stripped-down Simmons, we tried the exact same scenario that worked with Stevie Knight 2 months earlier. Andy came out at Morecambe in his butler garb. Then Alex came out in full beard and aviator shades. I called this look his George Michael phase. Ha ha. To mock his outfit and challenge him to a match. But when Simmons returned for their main event later that evening in more traditional ring wear, his make under didn't resonate. Simmons the butler had been the ultimate downtrodden underdog, a working class hero the fans rallied behind in droves. But plain old Andy Simmons didn't attract anywhere near the same support. Behind the butler outfit, the real Andy lacked Stevie's natural likability. Perhaps we should have just turned him heel. Simmons certainly proved a revelation when he turned bad the following year. But I'll admit, at that time, I didn't really know what to do with him from a personal and from a personal standpoint, I wasn't his biggest fan. From the heights of Simmons' mania, Andy's FWA career would eventually peter out. I hardly booked him at all in 2016.
Oh, God. Oh. No, right. So, my issues were Greg just wrote it himself 2 pages back. Who was I a butler for? They've just said they've written Duke of Danger out. That's why I'm saying, why am I the butler? I don't want to be. I go to the gym 4 or 5 times a week. I have a great body. Not great, well, not the best, but do you know what I mean? I was, you know, God bless his heart. Paul Travell, never seen the inside of a gym in his life. You know, the big complaint about FWA was there was no bodies, or not many bodies. So I was like, well, I'm not the butler to anyone. Buttercup had long gone. She'd, do you know what I mean? And so who am I butler for? And I've got this great body, and I was going to save this little minor story for another day, but...
Seeing as you've driven me to this, Greg, I'm gonna throw it out now.
At Uprising in Coventry, I came out of the shower and Darren Walsh, who is now Thunder, so he's a big
Thunder then as well.
Yeah, he's a big heavyweight wrestler, and his exact words to me were, he goes, "I don't know why they dress you up like that when you've got a body like that, and all the other lads around here have all got pigeon chests." That was exact words to me, right? And that really sort of resonated with me. I was like, "Cool, I'm training all the time. The FWA's on telly, like." I just felt like, let's move on. And maybe a heel turn could have been an idea, but no one suggested it. So I was just like,
Greg didn't like you at that point anyway, so it was all over.
What?
But you did pick up a big win alongside Doug Williams you were defeated by Charlie Rage. That was at Noah Limits 2.
In hindsight, I look back and I can remember turning up to a show and I'd driven all the way. I don't care because it was just a job, but like, I turned, driven all the way to Cleethorpes and I'd, you're going to lose to Iceman in 5 minutes. And I'm just like, fine. But I sensed then it was like he was trying to punish me. But like, what do you think Iceman was going to hurt me? Do you know what I mean? Iceman was one of the best workers in the country at the time. Like, doing what he does. So I didn't really get it. It just seemed a real waste of my time. But he still paid me and I drove home and that was the end of it.
Okay, so now we get to, so this is pretty much you and FWA done. Mm-hmm. So now we get to the IPW years, where we talk about a young man we can't mention, who, with help from supportive parents, ran monthly shows, featuring a roster of cult overseas newcomers like Super Dragon, Stevie Douglas, hungry Brits like Ashley Reed and Paul Robinson, and established FWA stars like Johnny Storm and Andy Simmons, and a young student from Portsmouth, FWA referee and Theo Walcott lookalike, Andy Quilden, who was proving to be a surprise revelation as a booker. Oh, thanks, Greg. So me and Greg are good.
Cool.
Okay.
Yep.
That was just your next mention. It's just nice that we were mentioned in the same sentence, and I'm mentioned in such a positive light, whereby you are not.
Oh, so lucky. Go on.
So, oh my goodness, this is where you're. Oh no, this was out of context.
Right.
So Greg's quoting an Andy Alex Shane promo. Where he said there was a time when Andy Simmons couldn't. And there was a time when Andy Simmons couldn't even look me in the eyes and shake my hand without pissing his pants.
Not true, but there you
no,
go.
But it was a promo, Andy. So you can't get angry about a promo. It was the start of the FWA versus IPW rivalry, which again we'll get to in another thing. So let's just we're going to skip through these. We're going to skip through all of that now because the rest of it is covering the IPW versus FWA rivalry, which I'm sure we'll get to. In a later episode, because I think that was quite a historic point for British wrestling and for modern day British wrestling as we know it, whether people like to believe it or not. Now, the last thing I'm going to do, Andy. So, have you got any final thoughts?
Not really. Like, to be honest, I thought it was a complete hatchet job. It had been put to me as a complete hatchet job.
Who by, Andy? Let's stir some stuff.
Well, anyone who might have, the four people that read it.
Again, you're getting angry at nothing.
It's a joke, Andy.
Okay.
So, so apart from, so it came out, 5 years ago, maybe, that book. I was far more sort of protective over my private life a bit more then. So if I'd have read it then and known what was in it then, I think I'd have had a lot more to say about it. But now, being a married man with children, I'm over it. So
my next question is, have you seen Greg Lambert since the book was written?
So we went to go watch Marty, I believe, wrestle at Wembley for TNA.
Yep.
And there was a group of guys there. Stevie Knight was one of them, as a few others. And it was whispered to me that Greg Lambert had hid from the fact that he knew I was there. And he conveniently, someone had said, oh, there's Simmons, and he quickly found something else to do. So maybe out of just knowing he was unpleasant about me in the book, I don't know. But
and if Greg Lambert is listening, any words to him?
If he wants to talk, he can talk, but
the door's open.
Door's open, yeah. Like, to be fair, I mean, I referred to him as vermin on one episode.
That was before you knew.
That was before we'd gone through this.
But this is why I always say context is all. You know, people get wound up about stuff all the time without hearing the full picture, without hearing the full story.
True.
So there's an example there of why you should always know the full story before you.
But like when I was 27 and they're talking about my cystic fibrosis so publicly, I'd have punched him in the mouth.
That's fair enough. And I'm again, in hindsight, I'm sure he wouldn't want to do that.
Mm.
I don't know.
Probably felt like he got a hell of a scoop there. You know, like he knew, Alex knew that if we were going to do the angle, I wanted it to be proper and efficient and as good as we could possibly do it. And we didn't, you know.
I think that was also typical FWA though, because there was so much stuff that FWA had.
I should have known better.
You know, where it's like on paper, it sounds like the greatest thing ever, but the execution is so disorganized, like the whole of the FWA.
It's interest, isn't it? Like, yeah. Oh, we've got a new, so we've got Simmons, we can do this with him. Oh, but... Oh, we've got the Manchester Massive we're going to prioritise now.
Manchester Massive either. We've got this from today's episode.
Couldn't think of anyone else.
So, just to close, we've gone about an hour on this one. This is probably our longest episode ever.
Yes.
But, I mean, it was personal, so we had to we had to slog it out, didn't we?
Yeah.
But what I will say is Greg Lambert did release a book a few years later, where he detailed...
We've got to be quick here, man. Yep.
Why are you talking to me like you're my boss? I just want to close the podcast in a nice way.
Oh, okay. Go on.
All right?
Yeah, I'm listening. Go on.
Okay. So, Greg Lambert, a few years later, he wrote another book.
Yes.
Now, you're obviously mentioned in that book. I was actually interviewed for that book, and I put forward a hell of a story for my part, so check it out. But he did mention you a few times in the book.
Okay.
And to close, his last writing about you was on your last night with FWA, the new FWA, which I'm sure, again, we'll talk about on a future episode of the podcast.
Yep.
So, for you, there was not so many fond memories of the... of a match, would you say? Your last match in FWA?
Me and Martin Stone? Overproduced. Like, me and Martin have had wicked... You've been there, you've seen them. Anyone who's followed wrestling for 10, 15 years, even as recently as a few years ago, me and Martin have some wicked matches. And then we go out and do that because we're told what to do.
Okay, and Alex Shane didn't like the match, and that's what led to your ending, the new FWA, right?
Yeah.
Greg Lambert, on the other hand, actually liked the match.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay, that rings a bell, actually. I've got a story.
Okay. Here. And he wrote, in his book, he wrote, the loss to Stone signalled the end of Simmons' FWA run. This was a shame because he's one of the most underrated performers on the UK scene for the past 10 years. And he went on to become a commentator for Revolution Pro Wrestling alongside Ollie Bennett, doing a fine job.
Oh, so feel a bit bad.
So man. After all the horrible stuff you said, you know, a few years later, Greg wrote another book. And this book was only written, I would say, a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So much more recently. So, you know, after all that, all the time had passed, Greg's lasting opinion of you is you're one of the most underrated wrestlers of the last 10 years.
Bless his heart.
And you've just said a load of horrible stuff about him.
He started
it. He started it. Two wrongs don't make a right. I hope you feel like a horrible person now.
You've suckered me in with that.
Okay.
Funny enough, someone has told me he said that, but I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, you tend to remember the bad things more than the good, don't you?
Yeah, in closing, I didn't realise Greg had such a problem with me. I didn't realise anyone had such a problem with me. I don't realise I'd somehow built this reputation up as being big-headed and full of myself. I know a few years later when, like I said to you before, when I thought I'd be off to WWE in a year's time, I became a bit of a... I'd say I was a bit big-headed then, but back in those days, I thought I was friends with everyone. So it is a bit of a shame that he felt the need to... That he felt that way. I won't say felt the need to write that in his book. He can write whatever he wants in his book. But for him to feel that way about me, I was completely unaware, oblivious to it. But there you go. Hopefully I've told my side of the story.
And hopefully you two can get along with each other. It'd be nice to get you two on here together, wouldn't it? We can.
Maybe that'd be good, actually. Maybe that'd be really good, yeah.
Yeah, can clear the air. Yeah. And I can play the role of Jeremy Kyle. or a male version of Trisha is probably more accurate.
Yeah.
Montel Williams. So, anyway, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the A Squared Circle Wrestling Podcast. It's been a long one, but I believe it's been a good one. Follow us on Twitter at A Quildan, AQUILDAN.
And at Boy Simmons, BOYSIMMONZ.
And we'll speak to you in a while.
Laters, Greg.